Richard Neal, we've been watching him for years. My favorite of all congressmen. That's because he is my congressman from Massachusetts 1st District. He's been in office since 1989, and that has actually served you well, because now, sir, with all of your wonderful knowledge, you have risen to the top of the heap as the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. That's extraordinary.
Well, I feel really, as you might expect, pretty proud of the accomplishment. I think that as I've ascended to what is clearly one of the two or three most important positions in the House of Representatives, it also, I think, has been based upon a lot of accumulated, not just experience, but knowledge along the way. Many of the issues that we engage include all tax or revenue matters because of the constitutional requirement for that. And then we do trade and tariffs, Medicare, Social Security, pensions, welfare, management of the public debt. And I think I can't emphasize enough how important the Medicare portion of our responsibility is, considering that at many of our hospitals across the state, in fact, most of our hospitals across the state, at least half their revenue comes from Medicare.
Well, so I have a question for you. I've never quite understood how this works. You're the chairman of the whole committee, but obviously you have subcommittees. How does that interaction work between the subcommittee chairs and the people on the subcommittees and the chair of the whole thing?
Well, yesterday we convened at 1 o'clock with the subcommittee chairs. The subcommittee chairs came through what we know in the process as the regular order. It would be largely due to seniority. And at that juncture, each subcommittee has a special responsibility, including revenue, which would be tax, health, oversight, again, public welfare. And another very important one is trade and tariffs. And then we have a specialty as well that's known as Social Security. So I met with them yesterday to give some instruction based upon what I thought the priorities ought to be for the subcommittees. And I laid out an opportunity at that moment for them to then request some latitude for what they would like to engage as well. So it works pretty well on the basis of expertise. I chaired the tax subcommittee before. I spent a long, long period of time in the majority and the minority. I chose that committee for the purpose of engaging the whole debate about tax in America and public revenue. So it is, I think, based on experience, it's based on seniority, but it's also based upon the expertise of the individual who chooses what subcommittee they'd like to be on.
So Trump and the Republican Congress pass a tax package. And it was an anathema to many of us. We really thought it was just awful, and I think there are an awful lot of people who come to see that. What are your options now? You're the chair of the most important committee on that in the House. The Senate is still Republican, and the president, with his veto power, is certainly the Republican. How can changes be made? Do you have any leverage?
Considerable leverage, in fact. And I think that as we move forward on this, the first thing we're going to do is to hold some hearings that heretofore had not been held on their tax package. They wrote the tax measure in 51 days, and there was not one public hearing on it. Not one expert witness was asked for input. And we objected on the Democratic side, largely because we thought that the benefits of the tax package were concentrated at the very top. And the evidence is overwhelming, incidentally, that in fact has happened. Recently, the forecast from the Congressional Budget Office, which for somebody like me is part of adhering to the old baseline that we've used in Congress, suggested that revenue is at 16.4% of gross domestic product. That means that the historic norm, generally north of 18 cents on the dollar, federal tax revenue, right now is at one of the lowest points it's been. And for them to argue that the tax cut would have generated additional revenue based on that old assumption that's been worn out, and I think disproven time and again that tax cuts pay for themselves, you can see that there has not been the kind of business investment in hiring that they said would take place. And if you don't have that increase in revenue from more people paying federal income taxes, then that argument falls by the wayside under inspection. So I think that all of the assumptions that they offered on the tax bill have now pretty much crumbled. So we're going to call attention to it. I think that there had been room during the Obama years, working, even though the chairman of our committee at that time was a Republican, Dave Camp, he argued for a 25% corporate rate. Trump proposed a 21% corporate rate. He argued for leaving the top rates alone at 39.6%, and the president proceeded to cut that tax, or to propose, and the Republicans embraced the idea of cutting that top individual rate to 37.6%, I believe. So we have, they're going to say, I can tell you right where they're going. This is what they did with Clinton, and this is what they did with Obama. They're going to say that it's a spending problem. And the truth is that the revenue forecasts that they've offered have not even come close to where they said it would be.
So you have faith in the American people. This is a tough question, that when you put it out there in your hearings and you raise it and the press covers it, that that'll make a difference with these people? I attempted to call them jokers, but these people?
Well, I'm not sure, but I think that one of the things that you highlighted with the opening of your questioning was the following, that their tax cut was wildly unpopular. I think on election day, 49% of the American people opposed it and about 40% supported it. And that's pretty unusual when you have a tax cut. And they would argue that everybody got a tax cut. And at the same time, when they saw what people at the top were getting, and they saw what people at the bottom or in the middle were getting, I think they came to the conclusion that this was more about concentrating wealth than it was about anything else.
But, Richie, doesn't that mirror the way in which we know from our polling and other things, Democrats versus Republicans? In other words, the Republicans are holding the line, the 40%. The Democrats are saying we don't like it because it came from this president?
Well, I think when you do tax work, there are outcomes. And I think that's one of the reasons you have to be meticulous in your analysis of what the results will be. It's hard to forecast, but if you recall that during the Clinton years, and I want to give Bush Sr. credit as well, when he looked at revenue forecasts and said this is just not working from the Reagan years, and some would argue it helped cost him his presidency.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then Bill Clinton came back as well with two increases that put the country's trajectory on about as sound an economic course it's been in my lifetime. And I frequently point out that Clinton's growth rates over his 8 years were higher than Reagan's. And that Obama, he had a higher growth rate with rates of 39.6 than George W. Bush did. And I know that people will say, and I understand it, because there are consequences to tax action. But when you look at where revenue is, that's, I think, one of the key measurements as to what finance looks like. And right now, we're headed toward those years of Eisenhower and maybe even Kennedy for where projections are, where we should be talking about an economy where we are arguing about whether or not federal revenue ought to be at 18 cents on the dollar or 19 cents on the dollar, but certainly not 16 and a half cents on the dollar.
So we only have a minute. So let me just think out loud, if I can do that. And that is, in 2020, we have an election. We have an election for president. We have an election for the House and the Senate. Assuming the House stays in Democratic hands, the Senate could go Democratic and the presidency could go Democratic. Will that make a huge difference in tax policy? You got a minute.
Well, I think it could. I mean, one of the things that it's hard for, I know in the constant pressures of the way news travels today and the speed of news, it becomes difficult for people to make an assessment. But you're still paying for the legacy of two wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and you're paying for the Bush tax cuts of 2001 and 2003, which amounted to $2.3 trillion. And Trump just came back by borrowing $2 trillion for a tax cut. So the revenue forecasts are really off, but one thing that we all can tell from right now, and that is that when you look at what's happening to that deficit, and that is not a Democratic responsibility in the sense that we did this, they did it.
Richie Neal is the congressman from Massachusetts' beautiful 1st District. We live over there, and we are proud of you, Richie. Thank you so
much, Alan,
for everything you've done.